This year, I am focused on saving and investing, but I still want to do things like travel. NerdWallet lets you compare top travel credit cards side by side to maximize your spending, some even offering 10 times points on your spending, which means you could end up with a free flight or maybe a better hotel room.
So what could future you do with smarter financial decisions? Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. NerdWallet, finance smarter. Reminder, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply.
Gretch, I know from my own experience that baby making is not always simple. There is a lack of knowledge surrounding how to get pregnant. And when you want to conceive, there can be a lack of understanding and resources. Frida Fertility is the only one-stop shop that makes it easier to make a baby with a set of solutions for everything from reproductive health to ovulation tracking to conception aid.
Frida is simplifying the journey to parenthood with products that help you go from trying to making a baby. Frida products are innovative, easy to use, and accessible, from ovulation prediction to at-home insemination kits. This is baby making simplified. Find Frida Fertility on Amazon, at Target, and select CVS stores near you. That's Frida Fertility, F-R-I-D-A, Frida Fertility. There are some stories from our mother's life that I love to hear about. I love hearing about how she played with a tin dollhouse when she was a girl. And just in time for Mother's Day, I found the perfect gift that captures all her stories for our families forever. It's called Storyworth. Storyworth helps you preserve precious memories and stories from your mother and mother figures for years to come. And it makes a wonderful keepsake book so you never, never lose these wonderful stories and memories.
Here's how it works. Each week, Storyworth emails your loved one a thought-provoking question that you get to help pick, like, what was your favorite toy as a little girl, or what was your first job? All your loved one needs to do is respond to that email with a story. Long or short, it doesn't matter. Give all the moms in your life a unique, heartfelt gift you'll all cherish for years, Storyworth. Right now, save $10 on your first purchase when you go to storyworth.com/happier. That's storyworth.com/happier to save $10 on your first purchase. When you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs has the tools to help find the right professionals for your team faster and for free. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. LinkedIn has a vast network of more than a billion professionals, which makes it the best place to hire. It gives you access to professionals you can't find anywhere else. LinkedIn does all that while making the process easy and intuitive.
I know that when I've been hiring, it's really hard to do. It's really hard to find quality candidates. It's really hard to handle the process. Hiring is easy when you have lots of quality candidates, like with LinkedIn Jobs. It's so easy, in fact, that 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/Gretchen. That's linkedin.com/Gretchen to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. Hello and welcome to Happier, a podcast where we discuss ideas for making your life happier, healthier, more productive, and more creative. Every 10th episode is a very special episode, and in this very special episode 140, we're going to talk about examples of people saying the right thing and the wrong thing in tough situations. I'm Gretchen Rubin, a writer who studies happiness, good habits, and human nature. I'm in New York City, and with me is my sister, Elizabeth Kraft. And Elizabeth, one of my favorite things about you is you always know the right thing to say.
Oh, thanks. Same for you. You always know the right thing to say. Almost always. That's me, Elizabeth Kraft, a TV writer and producer living in LA. And Gretchen, one time I definitely knew the right thing to say, although it wasn't a tough situation, is when you asked if I wanted to join you at Oprah's Gospel Brunch book party.
Elizabeth, we're here. We're waiting to park at Oprah's.
I know. I can't believe it. The valet guy is coming our way.
This is it. Yes. We have to say, before we launch into this huge topic of right thing, wrong thing to say, We just had a gigantic sisterly adventure. Yes.
Yes.
I flew to LA, you know, met Elizabeth. We drove to Montecito, spent the night sharing a bed, just like old days in a hotel room. And we went to this gospel brunch at Oprah's, and it was amazing.
It really was more than we could have even imagined. It was incredible. And we should say you are in her new book,
yes,
The Wisdom of Sundays.
Yes.
Do you want to explain what it is?
Yes. So Oprah has this very famous series of interviews called Super Soul Sunday. And so The Wisdom of Sundays is sort of highlights or parts that she's picked out from different interviews as kind of the most memorable. And it's sort of a good, if you like a kind of book where you could read like one page a day.
Yeah.
It's sort of like my Moment of Happiness newsletter where you get a daily quotation and it just something to think about for that day. So this was to celebrate the publication of The Wisdom of Sundays.
Yes, it was amazing and amazing performances too.
Yes. Beautiful gospel and great stargazing. And it was so nice to be, Elizabeth, we were saying, it's nice to be with your sister because you don't have to like pretend that you don't feel starstruck or nervous, or you and I were both sweating through our dresses and we didn't have to maintain yes. in front of each other. We were a good team. So anyway, that was an amazing thing.
Yes. And for anyone, by the way, who wants to hear more about Oprah's Gospel Brunch, the Satellite Sisters this week did a great segment on it. Liz Dolan, one of our favorite podcasters, was also at the brunch, and she goes through this week, like the whole thing, start to finish, who was there, who she saw. She saw way more people than we did. And it's really fun. Of course, we always love the Satellite Sisters, but yes. Got to check in this week to get the full rundown on the brunch.
Well, and Elizabeth, of course, I can't wait to hear you talk about it on Happier in Hollywood, too.
Oh, yes. It's going to be the ultimate celebrity sighting segment.
Yes. I will put a link to that in the show notes for episode 140. And Elizabeth, it's very appropriate that we're talking about Oprah right now, because one of the things Oprah is really known for is knowing the right thing to say, is sort of being able to yes. respond to somebody in a moment and say a thoughtful thing, a thing that really rings true. So it's sort of a good segue to this, you know, this very, very big subject that we're going to talk about for the whole episode, what to say. And first of all, we should say we heard from so many people covering so many different situations. Everything from death to sickness, fertility, infertility. We heard from someone who's was afraid she was going to lose her home in Sonoma County. She just was sort of lived through the wildfires. And then more lighthearted things, you know, like uncomfortable situations. And so, first of all, it was so fascinating to read what everybody said. So thank you.
Yes. And so useful in our own lives.
Yes.
So we're really going to take this and go forth.
Yes. Yes. And what was really interesting, I think, is we saw very specific patterns. Like there clearly did emerge some things that were very highly recommended. And Elizabeth, I have to say, I think the biggest thing that I took away from all of this was over and over that people just said that it's surprisingly effective and meaningful just to say, I'm so sorry about this. And just to say, I'm so sorry to hear that you got such difficult news from the doctor. I'm so sorry you have to deal with this. That just this being kind of heartfelt present, you know, I'm heartbroken about what's going on. That goes a long way.
Yeah.
Something as simple as that.
Yeah. And Gretchen, we got a voicemail from Sarah who really articulated this sentiment.
Hi, Gretchen and Liz. This is Sarah and I'm calling from Arkansas. And I was so excited about your what to say, what not to say episode because I just had Achilles heel surgery in May, which is a pretty big deal. You end up being in a cast, then a boot, then or crutches and a boot for about 12 weeks. And I got so worn out by people either making jokes about how fun the process is, or they would just say, boy, that sucks, or glad it's you and not me. Or, of course, they want to know about your injury, which is all good. Like, I'm assuming they mean it in good faith. But then one day, a man came up to me and just said, I'm so sorry you hurt your leg. And I just almost fell over with delight at the empathy that he provided with that single statement. And it just really meant a lot to me because by the end of that process, which is really just right now, I was just sick of it. I was sick of talking to people about the injury that, you know, was so visible on me. So anyway, just sort of a statement of empathy and kind of identifying with someone was just so helpful.
Another thing that really came through with all these is that there is no one right thing to say because people are different, situations are different, people are in different places. And so you really just have to think about the person that you're talking to. And what several people pointed out is you can even ask how people would like to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
Allison wrote, instead of assuming how you'd feel in the challenging situation, really none of us knows, ask the person kindly for their preference when you speak with them, either in person or by phone text. For example, after I shaved my head and close friends and family knew, the best response was to acknowledge it kindly. I know you're going through having lost your hair this week. Would you like to talk about it? Or would you rather we talk about something else? So then it's sort of opening the door for the person to guide that conversation.
Yeah, Gretchen, because I think to me, one thing that I keep getting is that it's just acknowledging it is the key. It's just when you ignore something, it just becomes the elephant in the room and it just gets awkward. And even if it feels awkward to talk about it, it's more awkward not to talk about it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, and another thing where it seems tricky too, and maybe you have to really feel out the situation, is whether people want to hear hopeful stories about other people's experiences facing a situation. It seems like some people do and some people don't. Several people mentioned that after a diagnosis, it is not helpful to talk about people who had a bad outcome.
Yes.
If you're going to tell a story, it should be a hopeful story, not a bad story. And don't mention something that you read on the internet, and don't mention something that happened to a fictional character in a movie.
Oh, God.
But, you know, this question of whether saying something that happened to you or somebody you actually knew as a hopeful story, is that helpful? Just from personal experience. So Eliza was born early. She was very, very small when she was born. I was induced because they were like, it's better for her to be out than in. She's not getting the nutrients she needs and her growth is being impeded. So she was born very early. And I have to say, a friend of mine once later said to me, I was really scared when I came to visit you. I'd never seen a baby that small before, like out of a hospital. So she was really, really small.
She was.
And I was walking down the street with her in a stroller, you know, this little teeny, teeny little flower bud in this, you know, expanse of a stroller.
Mm-hmm.
And this woman, this older woman, is on the corner with me and glances down and she said, oh, my baby was that size. Now he's 6'2". And she walked away. And for me at that moment, it was so reassuring. It was like,
it's all going to be okay.
It was just sort of, and she didn't even say, oh, it's all going to be okay. She was just saying like, this was my experience. But I could see how for somebody else that could have been really upsetting. But for me at that moment, it was like, I mean, here it is. It's almost 19 years later and I still haven't forgotten that. Just this like quick exchange. So, you know, sometimes it's just hard to know.
And Gretchen, several people mentioned that it's not comforting to say something that obviously can't be known. So, like if you're trying to get pregnant, when you least expect it, it will happen. When you stop trying, it will happen because nobody knows that.
Yeah.
Or if someone has a serious illness saying, you'll beat this because, you know, we don't know that you'll beat this.
Right.
Or if you're going through a divorce, you'll find a new love right away. And I can say personally, I found this very annoying in the subject of fertility because I was trying to have a second baby and to have people say like, oh, just, you know, keep trying. It'll work. Like, oh, I know that your next round of, you know, whatever treatment you're doing will be the one. I feel it when I'm sitting there going, well, the statistics are not saying that and neither are any of my testing. So don't sit here and tell me it will happen. It's not, you know, it made me feel like more insane. Like, well, no, like it's clearly not going to happen. So why are you telling me it's going to happen? It just messed with my head.
Well, it probably also made you feel like they weren't hearing you. Like they were just wanting to blindly be optimistic and not really allow you to experience the pain of like, this is happening right now and this is what you're going through.
Yes, it was like not acknowledging what I was going through. That's how I felt. And I know people meant well, but it just, and again, other people want to hear that though. I mean, and that's the tricky thing. Other people want to hear, it's going to happen for you. I know it is, you know, so it's tough.
Yeah, yeah. Well, now, and then to take a little bit of a lighter note, to be very careful when you comment on someone's appearance. Many people raise situations where someone was very well intentioned, but they really struck a wrong note when commenting on how someone looks.
Yeah, like Gretchen, my friend Corrine, who I've mentioned many times on the show, she always has, you know, smart things to say.
Yeah.
Her rule is that she only comments on someone's appearance if it's a choice they made that day.
Ooh.
So she, yeah. So she'll say, oh, I love your earrings, or your hair looks great, or, oh, that's, you know, great lipstick, or whatever it may be. But she won't say, oh, you've lost weight, or anything that would refer to something that's ongoing.
Yeah, that's a very good, easy rule. And it's interesting how many people said that saying like, wow, you've lost a lot of weight was something that often did not sit well. And that they said it's better to say something like, oh, you're looking so healthy, or like, oh, you look great today. Again, that's a way of expressing it. Because it's funny, you would think like, oh, saying, oh, you've lost so much weight. But it made people, many people said it made them feel self-conscious. Or it kind of implied that they looked bad before, or they just didn't like the fact that people were commenting on it. So I think Corrine's rule is really great, and that it's, if somebody picked those earrings, they're willing to talk about those earrings. And also the thing about commenting on someone's appearance is you don't know the significance of it to them. So back to the thing about Eliza being born early. So one of the symptoms that I had of what was the issue was that I didn't have very much amniotic fluid. And so I was very small. I didn't look really, really pregnant. And people would often say like, oh, you're so tiny, thinking that that was a good thing to say. But actually that was like a reminder that we were in this like very difficult medical situation. And so yeah, you're better off just like stick to the earrings, stick to the new scarf.
Yeah,
because it's you don't always know.
Yeah.
But then we heard from someone who talked about a different kind of intrusive question, which was very interesting, from Claire.
Yeah, she said, as an immigrant who has been staying in the U.S. for almost 30 years, earning a doctorate and advanced degrees from reputable universities in the U.S., holding a job and a career, paying our taxes, and becoming an overall responsible citizen, the wrong things to say are, and this applies to any immigrants, no, where are you really from? Where is that beautiful accent from? What is your nationality? Where are you originally from? Where are your families from? She said, if you're really sincerely curious, befriend us. Genuinely befriend us. We'll let you know our origins, our family stories, just like you would share your family story to your close friends over dinner. But if you are just curious, do know that such questions can be offensive, and we sniff such questions from miles away.
Mm. Hey, guys, this is Kristen. So can I just weigh in on this one?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so I feel a special connection to this question because I get the same kinds of questions all the time, and that's because I'm Asian. And I think in the U.S., a lot of people approach an Asian person as not an American and will frequently come up and ask me and other Asian people I know, but where are you really from? Minnesota. No, but really, where are you from?
Yeah.
No, but where is your family from? And it's a very common thing that my Asian friends have all complained about and I've complained about. And unlike Claire here, I feel that I get this question from a mile away before I even open my mouth, where people will yell things across the street. Hey, China girl, are you from China?
Oh my God.
And things like that. So I totally feel what Claire is saying here.
Oh, wow.
But Kristen, is there a way people can ask you that you feel is appropriate, or do you just think it shouldn't be a conversation topic?
Well, there are some people where I'm much more accepting of it. For example, if it's an Asian immigrant who is looking for somebody to bond with or wants to bond with me over that, I think it's totally fine for them to say, oh, my family came here from this place. Did your family come from that place too? I find that a lot less intrusive because that's trying to find common ground rather than let me guess as if I'm a game show. Like, I have the right answer. I know that you're this. Let me guess. No, I can tell just by looking at you, you're actually this.
Oh my gosh.
And it feels like they're just trying to make themselves feel good about knowing something about me.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, I think when people feel like someone's asking questions because they're prying, because they just sort of want information because they're out of sheer curiosity, that's very off-putting. It feels intrusive. It's not something that's coming up naturally as part of your relationship. It's just feeding curiosity. And so that's, you know, clearly very annoying.
Thank you, Kristen. I love getting your input.
This message is sponsored by Greenlight. When you're a parent, as we both are, you'll have your fair share of big talks with your kids. One of those big talks should involve money, and Greenlight can help with that. Greenlight is a debit card and money app made for families. You can send your kids instant money transfers, get real-time notifications of spending, manage chores, and automate allowance. Gretchen, we got Greenlight for Jack, and I love that it teaches him financial independence. Mm. He can earn money from us by doing chores and then getting money deposited into his Greenlight account. He can keep track of what he's spending.
Millions of parents and kids use Greenlight to learn how to make responsible financial choices. So stop putting off the money talk and start putting your kids on the right path. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free at greenlight.com/happier. That's greenlight.com/happier to try Greenlight for free. Greenlight.com/happier.
So, Gretchen, another thing we heard from a lot of people is that it can be very unhelpful to say things that suggest responsibility, as if you're in charge of the situation or it's, you know, or you have control over it. Yeah. So, for example, saying you're such a positive person, you'll get over this. Or maybe this is happening because you've been so stressed. Okay, definitely not a good thing to say.
Yeah.
Or your ex has been a jerk from the first day you met. Or you deserve this happiness. It's like, it makes people feel like, well, what if I weren't positive, I wouldn't be cancer. You know, it's just a weird thing.
Yeah, yeah. And then flipping it to like the right things to say, one of the things that many, many people mention, and I think this is a really, really helpful thing to keep in mind, is that when someone is dealing with grief, one thing that they tend to find very comforting is when it involves sharing a memory of the person who's gone. They want to know that others appreciated that person and will miss them and will cherish their memory. And so anything that you can do to bring up a memory that you have of the person who has gone, or to raise the issue of the memories. And Sally, who very sadly lost a child, said, some people don't want to bring up the child because it might make the person sad. Guess what? The person is already sad. The person doesn't want the child to be forgotten even, and maybe especially after many years. To share a memory is a precious gift. And somebody along the same lines, Amanda, whose father died when she was 12, wrote, a new friend I met in adulthood had the perfect response to hearing of my dad's death. We were out to dinner, and when the topic came up, she said, I'm so sorry. What was he like? Mm-hmm. It's lovely when someone, even out of courtesy, allows me to carry on my dad's memory by telling a story or two about him. And this is interesting to me because I can see how you'd be like, well, I don't want to bring up the subject because I don't want to bring you down. And so it's interesting that people are saying that, like, no, it's actually a joy for me to reflect on this person and to like to think about those memories.
Another thing to say, Gretchen, comes from Lauren. She said, my grandmother died this summer, and there was one comment that I heard from someone at her viewing that has helped me tremendously in overcoming my grief. They said, how lucky I am to have had something that makes saying goodbye so hard. This helped me a lot because it helped me to turn my grief and despair into gratitude.
So that's an interesting way to reframe it. And it's a very beautiful sentiment.
Yeah. And Gretchen, on the subject of dealing with grieving and death, we wanted to talk to my very close friend, Karen Schwartz, who was married to my other very close friend, Mike Feldman. We were all friends together in college. And Mike was diagnosed at a very young age with lung cancer, and he died less than a year later, I think it was. So Karen obviously was in an incredibly difficult situation and, you know, dealt with people saying, I'm sure, the right and the wrong things to her during that and then after he died. So, Karen, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, of course. Thanks for asking me. I'm honored.
You know, when Gretchen and I started talking about the subject of the right thing to say in a tough situation and the wrong thing to say, I immediately thought of you because you went through such a difficult situation with Mike.
Our beloved Mike, yes, yes.
Our beloved Mike, who Jack, my son, his middle name is Michael, after Mike. So he was diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer when he was 33.
I think it was 4, but yeah.
34. Yep. Okay. And you were then, you know, coping with something that was beyond anything, obviously, in your, you could have imagined. And I'm sure people said a lot of right things and wrong things.
It's true. And the funny thing, though, is that I don't remember any specific wrong thing that anybody said any specific right thing that anybody said. What I remember is the spirit behind what people said.
Mm.
So I think if we're trying to tell people, you know, how to handle the situation, which is obviously like a fraught thing and uncomfortable and kind of an awkward situation, I think an important thing to remember is to tell yourself, like, maybe take a breath before you're in the situation and remind yourself of your purpose in the situation, which...
That's a great thought.
Thank you. Which I would think is to be kind or to be sympathetic or to be whatever. You know, you obviously have a good intention if you're approaching this person. So remember that intention before whatever you say.
Was there anything particularly comforting that anybody said to you or kind of...
Yes. And I thought about this for you, Gretchen. The idea that there's a specific good or bad thing to say, I don't think there really is, as I sort of said from this.
Mm-hmm.
But there's only like a good or bad intention or an intention that's not properly conveyed. What I would say is more, less when he was sick, but more after he died, one really good thing that was always good was to hear somebody's fond remembrance.
Yeah, we were just talking about that, how hearing what somebody, the memory is so important.
It is. And I think in this context, what comes across, and again, is the fondness, too. You know, that like, if you're coming at that and you have a remembrance of the person or a fun story about the person or something like that, and you're conveying it with that sense of genuine warmth and fondness, right? I think that gets translated to the person. Hearing it, the feeling behind that gets translated.
Yes.
Another maybe helpful thing for people to think about is just to think before they even say this, that like, think even just of the word fond, and then it will come through, I think.
Mm.
And to me, as somebody who, you know, was grieving, it was like your heart is just broken. And when you hear something so loving and warm, it makes you physically feel even better. You know, not just that you have the tangible story and the words of the story, but that you have that warmth.
Oh.
If that makes sense.
And Karen, I'm wondering, because now it's been, you know, 10 years. Is it still helpful for you to hear those memories? I bet your kids like hearing those memories.
Oh, yeah. 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 It always is. It always is helpful because, you know, the sad thing about somebody dying is that they're gone, you know, and a fun story brings them back and keeps them around and keeps them, you know, close to the person's heart.
Well, you know, it's making me think that even this idea of the right thing to say and the wrong thing to say is the wrong way to set up the show, because it's like it trips people up. And I think part of the reason they say nothing is they're afraid of saying the wrong thing. And it's more like think about your intention, think, and then just blurt out whatever you can and just try to have that fondness and that good intention. And it sounds like you're saying that counts for a lot.
That counts for everything, I think.
Yeah.
It's not the specific word. And in fact, like, I remember very well that like a week or two or something after Mike died, or after we came back and Sarah was three at the time we went back to nursery school, one of the nursery school moms like invited the two of us out with her daughter for like a ladies lunch at the mall or something. It was like, you know, it was cute. It was sweet. We got there and she was going through a divorce, and she said like these from the heart said how, you know, in nursery school, she thought she was the only single mom and she didn't realize we were going through all this stuff and she felt really bad and this kind of stuff. And then she proceeded to say like every textbook, like textbook comically terrible thing that you could say. at least you're not getting divorced. You're so lucky that you're not getting divorced. Like, that's so much worse. Like that kind
of
stuff.
Oh my God.
But my point in this is, I'm telling you with a laugh, because even at the time, I was laughing that she was saying, like, just so sticking her foot in her mouth. And I was able to do that because she'd invite us to lunch, and she was so sincere in her kindness of the ask.
Right.
And then the fact that she said literally, like, textbook terrible, check them off a list of awful things to say to me was really funny. You know? And not at all hurtful.
Wow.
But, yeah. But I think the spirit that you're speaking in, if it's kindness, everybody feels that, you know? And then if for some reason that gets lost in translation or you trip up on the wire or something like that, like, because you were being kind to begin with, and that's your intention, it's so easy for you to, you know, rectify it. You know
yes,
I mean?
That's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Karen. This is super helpful.
Yes. Thank you, Karen.
Thank you, guys. Love you both.
Love you. Bye-bye.
Okay. Love you.
So we were talking to Karen about sort of the general intent of what you're saying around to someone who's going through a very tough time. And many people pointed out one very specific kind of thing that you can do, which is to be specific when you're making an offer of help. Instead of just saying, like, well, what can I do? Or let me know if I can help. It's better if you can try to be specific. And people were saying things like, give me your grocery list or I will go for you. Or like literally calling and being like, I'm at the grocery store right now. What do you want me to pick up? I'll buy it for you and drop it off. Or I'm going to Starbucks. What can I bring you? Or, you know, tell me if there's a night when you want me to watch the kids. Like, the more specific that you could be with your offer, the more it helped people to say yes, or even to think about how they could be helped. A lot of people said that you're just so dazed that you can't even think of, like, I can't even give you an assignment because I can't even, like, conceptualize what that would be.
Right. And I think a lot of people interpret, if you just say, let me know what I can do to help, they interpret that as, I don't want to help. I'm just saying this to say it. You know, I think if you're not specific, people don't really take you seriously.
Right. Right. Well, you know, and then it is tricky because sometimes it feels like something feels like the right thing to say, but maybe it turns out it's not so great. And this was one I thought was interesting. Ina said, I lost my father 3 years ago, and he had been battling cancer for a year before passing. One thing that makes me very frustrated is when people say, I can't imagine what you're going through, or I could never go through what you're going through. I got to say, I could imagine myself saying something
like that.
And she points out, especially when people say they could never be as strong as me, that really makes me angry. I didn't choose the situation. This happened to me, and I just had to adjust and do what needs to be done. No one wants to cope with a death, but some of us have to earlier than others. I wish people instead could have the courage to ask questions. Ask if there is any little thing you can do. Ask how they're actually feeling. Ask if they need help with anything practical like food or company. When I got out of the worst of my grief, I remembered those who constantly kept sending messages or just hearts to let me know they were thinking of me. Sometimes it's better to just be honest and say, my heart is effing breaking for you and I wish I could fix everything, instead of some cliche like time heals everything. Mm. And, you know, the thing that she brought up is something that a lot of people did, is that when you say, I could never do what you're doing, it makes people feel isolated and set apart, and also makes them question, like, wow, can I really do this?
Right. Am I going to be able to get through it?
Yeah, right. And it's also like focusing on me. I could never do what you're doing, instead of saying, like, well, you're doing a great job, or like, how can I support you?
Yeah. I mean, the intentions matter a lot, Gretch. Probably the most important thing is someone's intention.
Absolutely. I could not agree more. And I have to say, I have a friend. So Jamie, as you know, had hepatitis C, which is extremely serious. It attacks your liver. And it was a very, very big concern. And then he was cured by the miracle of science. And it's amazing. And I will post a link to something that I wrote on the day that he got his all clear from the doctor. And he's totally cured, which was amazing. But for a long time, it really was this thing that we were dealing with. He tried all kinds of experimental treatments. I mean, it was a big thing. But we didn't really think about it that much day to day, I have to say. Like, it wasn't like we felt like we lived with this thing hanging over our head. We sort of tuned into it and tuned out of it. But I have a really close friend, and every time she saw me, she would ask with such great concern, like, how is Jamie's health? And it would always sort of take me aback, because I'm like, wow, I don't really think about Jamie's health on a day-to-day level, you know, that much. And so it was sort of like alarming, because it would remind me, like, wow, some people would be much more worried about this than I am. Maybe I should be more worried. But I knew that in her case, it was truly an expression of love. Like, she really cared about both of us. And to her, this was like a huge thing, you know, and so it didn't take it amiss.
You were able to sort of take in what she was saying.
Yeah.
Because you knew the intention was great.
Right. And that she was asking this question to show her ongoing concern, not out of any kind of like voyeuristic or gossipy sense of wanting it. She was truly, truly concerned.
I don't know about you, but I'm always looking for ways for my son to get involved and give back in our local community. That's why I'm excited to tell you about Student Visionaries of the Year, a campaign by Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, the largest nonprofit organization dedicated to creating a world without blood cancers.
Student Visionaries of the Year is a 7-week philanthropic leadership development program for high school students. Participants form strong teams and fundraise in honor of a pediatric blood cancer survivor in their local community. This program is transformative. It not only helps students develop valuable life skills like project management, communication, financial literacy, and entrepreneurship, not to mention it looks great on college applications, but most importantly, is also a chance for them to engage in meaningful work within their community and make a real impact on blood cancer patients and their families. You can learn more about Student Visionaries of the Year or even nominate a student at lls.org/students. That's lls.org/students.